What I'm about really is to poke some good-humoured fun at photographic clichés, because I'm very conscious that I perpetuate a lot of these clichés myself. So I'm not speaking from any kind of high moral ground, far from it. But I just think that a lot of us photographers become a bit lazy in relation to our visual outlook, for want of a better phrase, the way we frame photographs, the subjects that we photograph, the way we do them, the way we treat them in post-processing and so forth like that. I'd love to see far more fresh thinking and fresh viewpoints in photography. Now, I'm coming at it, I suppose, from a camera club kind of perspective. I'm pretty familiar with what goes on in the camera club scene here in Ireland. I'm not so familiar with what is coming out of the art schools and so forth. But I do know that in Dublin, for example, there is a vibrant fine art style of photography being done by art school students and the like. And you'll see some of their work in places like the Gallery of Photography. Likewise in Britain, you know, there are fine institutions across the country that develop good visual techniques by young photographers. But that's not where I'm looking at, if you like. I'm more interested in the more down-to-earth, more pedestrian kind of day-to-day recreational photography. And as I say, it's kind of approaching it on a kind of a good-humoured basis rather than kind of any kind of po-faced approach. Because, as I say, I'm just as much guilty as many others in relation to producing clichéd images.
I think this is the perfect opportunity now for you to get it off your chest, John. what tops the list? What is the one that really grinds your gears?
Oh, no doubt, wedding photography. And I think everybody listening to this will have seen a recent wedding album, either their own or relations of theirs or whomever. And wedding photographers, God bless them, they've a difficult job to do. I suppose a lot of customers expect particular type of images, but let me give an example, you know, the selective colour picture where the bride and groom is in black and white, but the bouquet of roses in the bride's hand is in bright red, that kind of thing.
The kind of Schindler's List kind of
that
moment,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, that was fresh and new in about 1993. But, you know, we've moved on. And yet there are wedding photographers still producing these type of pictures. Back when I got married, back in 1982, the clichéd images at the time were photographers using multi-prism filters or superimposing the bride and groom on a wine glass or a candle. And I'm sorry to say that I've got a wedding album with some of those pictures
really?
In it, like, because I blame my wife. She wanted them. I didn't. And Bob Rock here in town, who was a brilliant and he's an outstanding photographer and he still is. And he recently had an exhibition here in town and it was top class. But we were paying Bob for the work and he gave us what we wanted. And, and as I say, bad taste tended to prevail in some of these pictures. But there are fashions, I suppose, in photography, these type of images, the trends come and go. Another type of typical clichéd wedding photograph, in my view, is where you've got the bridal party jumping in midair, this kind of stuff, you know. Or there are deep vignettes around the bride or the groom or both, as the case may
be. Like a gun barrel.
Exactly. And, you know, I suppose it's all good fun in a way. Nobody takes it too seriously. And the vast majority of people, when they get their wedding album, it'll be the first are probably the only time in their lives where they're photographed fairly intensely for hours on end. And the images are fun. You know, they will last a lifetime and beyond. The one thing that will survive from the day is the wedding album. But, you know, I would love to see these clichéd images being phased out as much as possible and have a more, for want of a better phrase, a more restrained visual approach, I suppose, to some of the images.
But, well, what would you like to see, John? And I know we're not expert wedding photographers, and it's a job. And,
it is a job, yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot you have to convey in doing that. But
yes,
from the wedding photographs you've seen, what would be the best ones? What would they have captured?
I think there has been a welcome trend in recent years to a more casual approach, away from the kind of posed groups and all the rest of it. And I think that can be refreshing. I think, in fact, it's a mixture of both. I think in a good wedding album, you need a combination of group shots to record the uncles and the aunts and the cousins, the family groups, as well as the more casual shots, the candid photographs of, say, the bridesmaids or the flower kids or whatever. They can look wonderfully because they don't look staged. They're not staged. And a good photographer, his or her keen eye will capture these images. And in many cases, they can be much more appealing than the kind of the standard staged ones. But I think there's a room for both. But certainly when I leaf through a typical wedding album, there are some images which just make me cringe. But again, as I say, I'm approaching this from a photographic nerd point of view. And the vast majority of people aren't bothered. And, you know, why should they?
Well, you do touch on something, but have you ever photographed a wedding yourself?
I have. I photographed several weddings. I used to photograph weddings for friends and relations until I put my foot down some years ago and I said to my wife, who invariably used to land me with these jobs, I said, absolutely no more. I think the typical Irish wedding is a ghastly occasion. And the technical aspects of the day from a photographer's point of view aren't particularly stressful, but it's just a hell of a long day. Nowadays, you practically have to be at the bride's home at 8 o'clock in the morning and you finish up sometime 11 or 12 o'clock at night, exhausted. Oftentimes, the photographer has forgotten about where food is concerned. But that's just one part of it. After that, then, you might have be facing the post-processing on a computer of 2,000 or 3,000 images to whittle them down to a manageable number. And there's only so many hours in a day that you can actually bear looking at the same ugly people day in and day out before you go absolutely nuts. So you have to say stop and I'll return to it tomorrow and do some more. And I don't think, in all seriousness, I don't think people appreciate the hard work that goes into producing an album by wedding photographers. It is a long, drawn-out process. There is a lot of stress involved. There's always the possibility of equipment failure on the day and all the rest of it. You have to kind of contend with the weather conditions. This time of the year in winter, if there's a wedding at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the photographer has only an hour or so of daylight to capture some of the images. So you've all these issues to contend with. And of course, needless to say, it is a once-off. The photographer doesn't get a second chance. Mm-hmm. If something goes wrong, something seriously goes amiss, he can't come back and revisit it another day. You know, he has to work. He or she has to do their best on the day. And yet, I've seen some fabulous photographs from some wedding photographers around the country, really creative. And when I think that they're working to a very, very tight deadline time-wise, the fact that they can produce outstanding images, I simply stand in awe at their ability to so do. On the other hand, at the other end of the scale, I suppose, you get weekend cowboys, as some people call them, chancing their arm, offering cut price weddings, and people can foolishly fall into that trap in contracting with these people and end up getting very, very poor images, which is a shame because, as I say, those images from the wedding will be looked at by their children's children in years and decades to come. Like, you know, so it stands to reason that one should get the best photographer one can and cut down the expense on other aspects of the wedding maybe, but focus on that. I think it's very, very important. I think in the main, Irish people, and this is a wild generality, I suppose they don't have the same sophisticated visual sense that I would like them to have. We're not great, I think, as a nation for our visual acuity. if I can put it like that. I mean, we are well known for our literature and for our music and all the rest of it. Artists, not so much. Yes, of course, there's people like Jack B. Yeats and Robert Balla and others, but by and large, visual art isn't our strong point. And I would think that would apply across the board. Now, that, as I say, is a wild generalisation, and naturally there will be exceptions. But
well, why do you think like that, John?
The way looking at photographs, looking at art and so forth, I think we're a small nation. Yes, we've excelled in the field of literature. We've punched way above our weight. But when I compare ourselves, for example, to Poland, I always was a huge admirer of Polish photography. And this is going back to the 1970s when they were behind the Iron Curtain. I remember seeing books and seeing Polish photographers at that time featured in various magazines and the like. And even back then, and now as well, they appear to have a particularly well-honed visual skill where photography is concerned. I can't speak of their other art forms, but in photography in particular, Poland, I think, has a significantly good record. And I know some Polish photographers living in Cork, and likewise, they are extremely good with a kind of a very keen vision and the ability to translate that vision into photographic art. Always impressed by that. And comparing Poland and Ireland, I think it's fair to say that Poland's photographic sophistication would be significantly above ours, even though they had for a long time had to live under the yoke of communism and so forth, when they wouldn't have had access to the same equipment that we would have had in the West. It still didn't stop them, you know. Now, I suppose that's taking us a long way from the cliched images in your typical wedding album, like, you know.
Oh, we'll get back to the wedding photos in a minute.
A subject close to my heart. But, you know, I know lots of photographers who are very experimental and are pushing the boundaries, etc. But they're very much the exception rather than the rule. And again, taking it back to your commoner garden camera club type of photography. And camera clubs, by the way, are thriving in this country at the moment. They're oversubscribed in most cases. I know of several camera clubs where there are waiting lists of people to join up, etc., etc. And yet, a lot of what is produced is trite, to put it like that. Now, you could argue that most of everything is rubbish. Most of what any particular artist will produce will be rubbish, you know, unless you're a Mozart or a Beethoven or somebody like that, you know. But, and again, I suppose from the point of view of the typical camera club member, he or she may not be interested and probably is not interested in producing cutting edge kind of edge of the envelope images. What they want to do is master the equipment that they've purchased, produce pleasing images that are in focus, properly exposed, blah-de-blah. They're not a bit worried about cliches, and they would probably argue that they would only love to be able to produce an image as good as some of the cliches that we're all familiar with. With the result, for example, that people troop in their hundreds every year, if not thousands, down to the Black Valley in Killarney. And there is an old cottage down at the very end of the Black Valley called Drumluska Cottage. Thousands of images are produced of this particular location every year, and they all practically look the same. And that has been done for the last 30 or 40 years. And one of these days, I promise myself that I'm going to go down there with a stick of dynamite and blow the cottage sky high, and in one fell swoop, eliminate for once and for all that cliche from Irish photography. And I'm sure I would be cheered to the rafters by a lot of my my colleagues.
You do touch on something. I'm quickly moving on from the act of terrorism.
Do not do this at home, folks.
This is something that interests me. is that because I've been learning photography for the past, I got the camera about a year ago now, and there is a surplus of information, shall we say. It is one of the real booming industries of our time is education and training, particularly with regard to photography.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because of photography's technical nature,
yes,
there's a lot of ways in which, you know, the big part of learning photography is getting it right in camera. And when you talk about that, it's kind of, you know, making sure it's properly exposed and, and all of that, shutter speed, all of the depth of field, all of that.
Yes.
That can tell I've taken a right, a proper photograph.
Yes.
If all of these conditions are met.
Yeah.
Does that constrain you maybe in a way or limit your thinking when it comes to the more artistic side of it in terms of...
I think it does. There, it certainly constrains people in the main for a period of time at least, and for some people for all the time, in that they spend a lot of time climbing the learning curve to master the technicalities, the shutter speed, the aperture, the ISO, all that stuff. And then comes a time when they've more or less nailed that, and there's a huge sense of relief that at long last they're able to do what the camera can do, if you like. They can use it to its abilities. And, you know, a lot of people stop at that level. And then while they spend a lot of time learning the techniques, the technicals of the camera and all the rest of it, they don't tend to spend hardly enough time in relation to educating their eye. Some photographer, a chap called Ray Spence from the UK, I was talking to him in Cork there the other week, and we were discussing this very subject about, you know, people being more imaginative in their visual approach and all the rest of it. And he said he found, travelling around camera clubs in the UK, that he was surprised at how, in the main, ignorant a lot of people were in relation to artists in general. You know, he asked people, who would your favourite artists be? And people said, well, I don't have any particular artist. I know nothing about Picasso or Goya or whomever. And his view was like that, to be a good photographer, you need to cultivate a kind of a photographic eye. And in order to do that, you have to look at other visual art forms as well. You need to go into art galleries. You need to buy art books. You need to buy books by the classic photographers, by Henri Cartier-Bresson, etc., etc. And you need to look at the images. And, you know, you've mastered the technicalities. You know how to expose to get a properly exposed picture. That's fine. But you also need to educate your visual eye, if you like. And you can only do that. You can't do that by going on a course. You can only do that over a period of time by absorbing, almost by osmosis, the influences of other artists, be they photographers or painters or sculptors, as the case may be. And I always advise people, you know, buy some of these books. I mean, the German publisher Taschen produce fabulous art books at very low cost. And you can go in, for example, to Vibes and Scribes in Cork City, and you can buy these magnificent books for very little money. And it's always worth leafing through them and almost, as I say, subliminally absorbing the effect of these images. And there is no doubt that, unknown to oneself almost, you will find that over time your visual sense will be heightened. It cannot but be heightened by looking at the works of masters in the field. And people need to do more than just learning the techniques. Fine, go on your camera course. Listen to people about how to post-process your images in Photoshop or whatever. Become as adept as you can. But don't forget that it is as equally important to cultivate a good visual sense. Some people are born with it, I suspect, and they've just got this innate ability to pick a good image when they're photographing something. Most of us need to be educated in that respect. And yes, there are kind of, you know, basic compositional rules that everybody learns, such as the rule of thirds and so forth, the kind of classical rules that came from painting during the Renaissance, etc. And they're very important to learn those. And then there comes a time when you've absorbed all that and you can actually break those rules. But it is very easy to see where somebody who knows what they're about in breaking one of these rules as against a raw beginner in not knowing what the rule was in the first place. It becomes very apparent, you know. Hard to explain it, but it becomes apparent.
It is hard to explain, but I think part of it is, personally now I feel, that the cliches we're talking about and, you know, emulating what the work that has come before, be it in a technical form or in an artistic form, I think that's part of the process of discovery and of learning yourself. But, you know, there is a point at which you have to branch off from that. You're not a tribute act.
Yes. Yes.
But may I ask you, you talked about how you have the photographer's eye, or you mentioned the photographer's eye the last time we spoke as well. When you approach a scene now, a picture, what is going through your mind? What is your first impression of what makes you want to take a photograph, John?
That is an interesting question. Sometimes it'd be simply to record a particular scene, a straightforward record shot, without any pretension to artistic significance whatsoever about it. You know, if I want to photograph my car to send details of a claim to an insurance company. The done deal, exactly. Exactly. You know what I mean?
But you actually posted, this is just an aside, you actually posted about real estate photography,
absolutely,
I believe, as well.
Yes. Have you got a few hours to spare? But take the done deal eBay type shot. You're selling a product. You photograph it. There is absolutely no artistic element involved in that whatsoever. The camera does the job, you upload it and off you go. Then there would be the more, I suppose, artistic style of approach, where you want to produce an image that will maybe garner some kudos for you, that maybe you would like to frame and hang on your wall, that kind of stuff. And when I go about doing something like that, say take a typical landscape type shot. I do a lot of landscape type photography. My approach, if I'm going to a particularly over-photographed area, put it like that. Take, for example, you know, probably one of the most photographed places in the world would be the Eiffel Tower in Paris. And you see hordes of tourists there and they're snapping away on their phones and their compact cameras and all the rest of it. And they're all producing exactly the same image, like, you know, and why do they do it? I mean, everybody knows what the Eiffel Tower looks like. I've often wondered, you know, when they go back home, what do they do with these photographs? Like, you know, they invite neighbours in and bore them for hours on end and showing them pictures of the Eiffel Tower or whatever. But be that as it may, the point I'm getting to is this, that I think a good photographer should be looking at a different possibility, a different way of viewing, not being content with the kind of the picture postcard image that everybody is familiar with, but looking at some different aspect of it. You know, homing in maybe on a segment of the Eiffel Tower, seeing as we're talking about that.
Have you photographed the Eiffel Tower?
About 30 years ago or thereabouts. I haven't been back since. I'm going to Paris next year to pay homage to Napoleon, because I'm a huge admirer of Napoleon. And I feel a deep existential angst that an Irishman, the Duke of Wellington, Arthur Wellesley, was responsible for his down, fall. But be that as it may, that's another day's work. But I intend going there in the springtime and do some photography as well. But I certainly am not going to photograph the Eiffel Tower to take a picture postcard of it. Why bother? But what I would like to do, I think, would be looking at some other aspect of it, maybe photographing some of the people photographing the Eiffel Tower, that kind of thing.
Really?
The trick is to do something like that. Don't be satisfied with the pedestrian. Don't be satisfied with the hackneyed John Hine type postcard image. You know, look for something different. It's not always going to be possible. You know, if it were always possible, it would be very, very simple. It's not. It's difficult to do. But when you're photographing anything like that, you know, walk around the subject, look at different angles, consider photographing at different times of day, you know, photograph it during pouring rain, for example. How many people go out taking photographs during pouring rain? All it requires is a simple addition to your camera kit, an umbrella, and it can make a huge difference. That kind of thing. You know, look for different images. Go away from the ordinary and your photography will improve as a result.
Well, do you mind if I give you a hypothetical example?
Sure.
Or a hypothetical scenario? Say yeah. I'm going out and I imagine most people who would be listening to this will have this experience at some point in the very near future.
Mm.
I go out to the Front Strand,
mm-hmm.
go out to Clay Castle.
Mm-hmm.
What should I look at? How would I approach, say, I want to take a picture
yeah.
of the Strand or Clay Castle or the boardwalk or some area like
yeah.
that? Yeah.
There's a photographer here in town, a friend of mine, Ed Geary. And he does a lot of photography out the Front Strand and around town. And he produces very interesting images. But he doesn't photograph the kind of the commoner garden kind of scene. He uses special techniques like shooting on infrared, for example, to produce an almost surreal style landscape.
Mm-hmm.
He will go down on very low angles, take the boardwalk, you know, lie down on your stomach and have the timber of the boardwalk filling the frame almost, that kind of stuff. Again, at different times of the day, it's all about light, you know. Early morning light around sunrise is going to be totally different to sunset, for instance, as it's going to be different to the flat light of midday, which isn't very, very useful from a photographer's perspective. So it's a question of looking at all these permutations and combinations and finding the time to do that. And you know, by doing that and by taking several photographs, you may well come up with one image, if you're lucky, that will stand out from the rest. And I would also advise people not to be over-optimistic in relation to the number of good photographs that they can produce. If I say to people, if in the course of 12 months, if you're photographing subjects on a regular basis every week, if at the end of the year you have 12 good images that you would be happy to put in a frame, then you're batting above the average. But people have this unreal expectation that they've got their digital camera, that they'll produce things of beauty and joys forever every particular week. They're not. They won't. Nobody does. You know, you look back at the works of some of the best photographers and you look at, you know, the books of their work. Over a lifetime, they are relatively few images overall when you count them. But take Ansel Adams, for example, who produced classic works from the American West in the 40s and the 50s in that time, black and white images of the Rockies, etc. Wonderful, timeless images. But if you were to add up how many photographs, you know, would be in his artistic catalogue, not that lot when you consider that he'd been photographing for a long time. And that applies to a master photographer. When it comes down to the great unwashed, like the rest of us, like, you know, we have to kind of, I think, you know, just be careful in relation to our expectations. You know, if you're producing, if you want to produce artistic style photography, you know, it's a hard process. It's not easy. You have to work a long time at it. And you will be a master of the equipment and all the rest of it. That's going to be second nature after a while. But it's a long, hard slog producing particularly good images that would be seen as being above the norm, that in a camera club context might win prizes and all the rest of it like that. And, you know, that's the challenge. If it were easy, we wouldn't be doing it because, like any worthwhile artistic endeavour, or any endeavour for that matter, it's the challenge of doing one's best and exceeding one's expectations and working hard at it. You know, it doesn't come easy.
You've touched upon something I think that a lot of people don't necessarily realise, I think, in that you're going to make a lot of bad stuff.
Huge amount of bad stuff. I'll tell you something. I bought a new film scanner there the other week because I had boxes of slides of my kids when they were young. A lot of people listening to this won't know what a slide is. This was pre-digital, folks. There were small little 35mm transparencies that you projected onto a screen. They were of stunning quality, technically speaking. Anyhow, a lot of serious photographers back in the day would have chosen to shoot slide film rather than colour print film or black and white film. And I had lots of slides. A lot of them were of my kids as well as other work. And with this new film scanner, I wanted to digitise them and make prints from them. Fairly simple, straightforward process. But as I was going through these boxes of slides, which I hadn't looked at for years, you know, there was a lot of them there in relation to kind of landscape stuff that I had done back in the day, you know, down in Kerry and places like that. And I threw about 96% of them into the bin. Rubbish, you know. I said to myself, who in their right mind is going to be interested in these when I pop my clogs? Nobody. The images that will live after us, for the vast majority of us, are images of people, our family and our friends. And let's not kid ourselves. I can go off to some far-flung place, produce some mighty image, hopefully, have it win a prize in a camera club or whatever. But that's not really going to matter in the overall scheme of things. It's the pictures of my kids and my family that people will be looking at in 100 years' time, if they're going to be looking at them at all. They certainly aren't going to be looking at my landscape shots or my architectural shots or anything like that. They'll be long forgotten.
So why do you keep taking landscape shots, John?
Keeps me out of the pubs. That's about the size of it. But, you know, I do landscape. Not a lot of it now, I must admit, in recent times. But I just enjoy it. It is...
Well, you know, you do touch upon something that, you know, if you're doing something like this, particularly in this day and age, where you're oversaturated with images, you know, you are very unlikely to take the picture that
absolutely
is going
no
to
chance
resonate
whatsoever
throughout the centuries.
Absolutely not.
What are you doing it for? If that's your, you know, if you're getting into, I can do these great things. Is there a point at which you go, what am I doing this for?
I've often asked myself that, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I mean, sometimes I'm stood there in the middle of a stream, the camera on a tripod, taking a long exposure of flowing water down in the depths of Kerry or somewhere. And I've often said, what the hell am I doing here? Couldn't I be better off at home watching Sky Sports or something like that? But
I could be blowing up that cottage right now.
I could
now.
Be blowing that cottage. That's a better idea again. But the one does it. Well, I do it. And most of the people I know who are photographers do it because they enjoy it. You know, it's something out of the ordinary. It's recreation. There's no question about it. Some people play golf. Some people go fishing. We photographers do photography because we enjoy it. And a lot of us, two camera clubs, etc., are part of a broader camera community, if I can put it like that. And there's a social aspect of it which can't be discounted either, and it's very important and very valuable. And that's basically it. Now, as I say, in the process, we produce images of our families and such like that, that, you know, will be the important photographs in the long run. In the short term, we kind of, I suppose, amuse ourselves by producing landscape and still life photographs and God knows what as part of competitions and such like. And yes, it's a challenge. One is stretching oneself from a technical perspective and hopefully from an artistic perspective. And it's all good fun, I suppose, in that respect. And also, I think that if one takes it seriously, as I mentioned earlier about looking at the broader field of visual arts, by going into art galleries and the like, by looking at books of paintings, etc., you're feeding in to a huge cultural legacy that is hugely valuable. And, you know, I was in London last week to see Goya's portraits in the National Gallery, and it's just awe-inspiring to see them in the flesh, so to speak. I was familiar with most of them from reproductions and books, but there is nothing like standing in front of a 200-year-old painting and just stand there in awe at the genius that produced this. Now, I don't know what kind of an effect that has on a person, but it cannot but be good in my view. You know, I think as human beings, we have produced some awful, have done some awful things, but we have produced some absolutely life-enhancing work as well. You've got the Goyas, the Renoirs, you name it. You've got the Mozarts, the Beethovens, the Kingsmen who produced Louis Louis, the best pop record ever made, etc., etc. So we've done a lot of fantastic things. And I think that we owe it to ourselves, if we have the time to do it, to feed into that, to draw upon it and to get nourishment from it. You know, I think that's important. So I think photography, for me at least, has enabled me to do that. And it has given me, I suppose, an avenue into these other areas where I probably wouldn't have gone down but for photography. So I owe that to photography in my particular case. You know, other people may be different, but I know certainly a lot of photographers who would probably share my experience as well in that regard.
Do you know what, John? You've made it very difficult to go back talking about wedding photographs.
don't knock wedding photographs. They're my kids produce them every now and then to embarrass me in front of people and so forth. Taken back in 1982 here in Yall, when I had long hair and a beard, and I looked like Osama bin Laden's younger brother at the time. Like, you know, it's embarrassing, but there you go.
And you were going to pass that on to the generations.
Oh, yeah,
that's
frightening.
All that's going
it
to remain of you,
absolutely frightening. It will. That is the frightening part of it, you know. And it is a sobering thought when you think of it, like, you know, that... that my grandchildren's grandchildren will probably be looking at these people in their 1980s attire and hair fashions and just have a good old chuckle at the whole thing, like, you know, and just as, you know, everybody does. And that's good too. That's all good fun, like, you know. But at least, to be serious about it though, it is a visual record. And nowadays, as I said, everybody's a photographer. And I know in my daughter's case, for example, she's constantly taking pictures of my grandchildren, etc. And they're fantastic to have, but she has most of these on her phone. And I keep after her saying, look, Jill, you need to print those out. You know, give them to me. Give me your phone. I'll upload them onto my computer and I'll print the best ones for you. Oh, yes, Dad, one of these days I'll do that. It hasn't happened yet. And she's not alone, of course, in that respect. An awful lot of people have these images either on their phones, on the hard drives of their computers, or they've uploaded them to Facebook. But I keep saying to people, where are these going to be in 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 years time? Unless you print your family pictures, they will not survive. Of that, there is no doubt. And it will be a huge problem or disappointment for future generations when they look back looking for a record of their parents and their grandparents, and there is no record extant. And that is something, I mean, my sister gave me some photographs the other day of her husband's grandfather, who had served in the First World War, and I must copy the photograph for her. But these were images, they're hard copy images that have survived over 100 years. And those are the photographs that will survive, the hard copies, not the digital images. Hard drives will fail. You know, computers will be thrown out. The only way that you could guarantee the survival of your family pictures is by printing them off. It's never been cheaper or easier to do so. You can bring a memory stick in or bring your phone in or whatever into a local shop and they'll print images for you. Those images will become valuable in years to come.
And you can get them printed on canvas. You can get them printed in beautiful frames nowadays. It's not even the cheap thing you get from the pound shop.
The quality has never been as good. But I would imagine that the number of photographs printed has never been so few, comparatively speaking. And that is a huge shame. And people need to wake up and do something about that, you know. Bring your pictures downtown, folks, get them printed. It's cheap and easy to do. It's not like the film days when, you know, you bought your film into the local chemist and you didn't know how many were going to be good or bad on it. Nowadays, you know which images are worth printing before you get them done at all. So why not do it, you know?
John, we're out of time.
Very good, Justin.
But we must come back must talk to you about Photoshop someday.
Excellent
as well.
Stuff.
We must talk
very
about
good.
That.
We must
it is
that.
Always a delight to talk to you.
Thank you very much, and, Justin. Likewise.
Thank you so much for coming in to talk to me today.
Very good. Thank you.